Ever get that, like, I don't know, uneasy feeling when you think about the First Amendment, our big free speech guarantee, and you start to wonder, like, could the government ever go too far in controlling what we're allowed to see or hear?
Yeah, for sure.
Well, that's exactly what we're tackling today on the Deep Dive. We're taking a close look at a Supreme Court case that wrestled with this very question, specifically when it comes to movies.
Right on.
We're diving deep into Teitel Film Corp v. Cusack, a 1968 case that really gets to the heart of, well, where's the line when it comes to free speech?
Absolutely. And while Teitel itself is all about films, at its core, it grapples with a much bigger question. It's really about when, and maybe even more importantly, how the government can step in and potentially censor something before it even reaches an audience.
Before it's even out there.
Exactly. That's what we call prior restraint, and that's what we're going to break down today. We're going to dig into Teitel and really shed some light on those crucial procedural safeguards. The ones the Constitution demands when the government sets up a system like that.
Okay, so let's set the stage here a bit. The Teitel case comes out of Chicago, right? And at the time, Chicago had this motion picture censorship ordinance in place. Can you walk us through what that actually meant for, let's say, a filmmaker who wanted to show their movie to the public?
Sure. So picture this. You're a filmmaker in Chicago, and you've got this amazing movie you want everyone to see. Well, this ordinance said, hold on, not so fast. You actually had to submit your film to the police department first.
To the police.
Yeah, for their approval.
Wow. Okay.
And it wasn't like a quick, grants over and you're good kind of thing. The administrative review could drag on like 50 to 57 days.
Whoa. So we're talking almost 2 months just waiting for that initial bump.
Exactly.
And here's what I'm really curious about. If a filmmaker, if their film got denied during that initial review period, what could they do about it? Like, how would they appeal that decision? And how long would they have to wait for some kind of resolution? That seems like a really crucial part of this whole system.
You hit the nail on the head. That's the real sticking point here.
Okay.
So this ordinance, it didn't have any guaranteed way for a filmmaker to get a fast judicial decision if their film was rejected. So imagine you've already dealt with those months of administrative delay, and then bam, you're stuck waiting even longer, indefinitely, really, for a court to even look at your case.
Oh, wow. And all the while, as a filmmaker, you're probably losing money, you're in limbo, just a ton of uncertainty.
Absolutely, a lot of pressure.
Yeah. And this isn't just like a theoretical legal what if, right? This actually happened to Teitel Film Corp. Can you tell us what went down with them under this ordinance?
Yeah, you're right. Teitel Film Corp, they got hit hard by this system. They were completely and permanently barred by Illinois courts from showing certain film
Permanently.
permanently, all because of this ordinance.
Wow. So it wasn't just a temporary hold. They were like totally shut down. That's really significant.
Yeah, it shows you the impact, the real consequences this had.
So taking a step back, with that situation as our backdrop, what was the central legal question that went all the way up to the Supreme Court? What was the core issue they had to grapple with in the Teitel case?
So, at the heart of it, the Supreme Court had to decide whether Chicago's very slow administrative review process, especially that lack of guaranteed quick judicial review, violated the First Amendment's protection against prior restraint.
Okay.
It really boils down to whether this system, the way it was set up, had enough checks and balances to prevent, an unconstitutional chilling of free expression.
Now, you keep using this term prior restraint, and I think it's worth pausing here to really define it for our listeners. Some folks out there might still be fresh on their constitutional law. So, what exactly does prior restraint mean, and why is it considered such a big deal under the First Amendment?
Great point. Prior restraint is basically when the government steps in and says, you can't say that or you can't show that before it even happens. It's like, imagine a newspaper being stopped from printing an article before anyone even gets to read it.
Oh, I see.
Or, like in this case, a film being blocked from being shown to the public.
Right.
The First Amendment really takes a dim view of prior restraint.
Okay.
The general idea is it's better to let people express themselves. Let the speech happen, and then if there's a problem, you deal with it afterward, rather than just shutting it down before anyone even gets to see or hear it.
That makes sense. Trying to silence something before it's even out there seems like a slippery slope.
Exactly. That's why it's seen as such a serious threat to free speech.
And you mentioned earlier another case, Freedman v. Maryland, which dealt with these procedural safeguards we're talking about. Can you explain how the title case connects to that earlier decision? How does it build upon those principles?
Sure. So Freedman v. Maryland, that was a few years before Tytel. It really laid the groundwork.
Okay.
It established that if the government's going to have a system of prior restraint, like a film censorship board, they have to play by certain rules, crucial procedural rules to protect free speech.
Uh-huh.
And Tytel takes those rules that were outlined in Freedman and applies them very specifically to what was happening in Chicago with that ordinance.
Mm.
It's like Freedman provided the blueprint, and then Tytel showed how to use that blueprint in a real-life situation.
Okay, so what were those specific procedural safeguards that Freedman laid out, those constitutional necessities? And how did Chicago's ordinance measure up against those standards?
So the Supreme Court in Freedman, they gave us a two-part test. First, they said the censor, whoever is doing the censoring, has to act quickly within a specified brief period. They have to either approve the speech or go to court to justify why they're holding it back.
Hmm.
And second, they said there has to be a guarantee of a prompt final judicial decision so any disputes can be resolved quickly.
Makes sense.
Now, Chicago's ordinance, well, it's doubled on both counts.
Sure.
First, those 50 to 57 days just for administrative review. That's hardly what you'd call brief.
Yeah.
And more importantly, like we talked about before, there was no guarantee of a quick decision from a court if a film was denied a permit. It was just limbo.
So basically, the Supreme Court saw that lengthy administrative delay, plus no guarantee of a speedy appeal to a court. And they basically said, this isn't cutting it. This isn't constitutional. Can you walk us through their reasoning a bit more? What were their big concerns that led to their decision in Tytel?
The court's reasoning was pretty straightforward. It all came down to the timeline. They emphasized that this big delay built into Chicago's ordinance, it clearly violated that Freedman requirement for a specified brief period.
Right.
And even more importantly, the fact that there was no guarantee of a prompt judicial decision, they said that created what's called a chilling effect on free expression.
Oh, interesting. Can you explain what you mean by chilling effect?
Sure. Think about it. You're a filmmaker, and you know you might face months of waiting just for that initial review, and then potentially years tied up in court if you want to challenge a rejection.
Wow.
You might just say, forget it, and not even bother making anything that could be seen as controversial.
Mm. Self-censoring, basically.
Exactly. And without a clear and quick path to a court review, the risk is that the government ends up suppressing a lot of speech that might actually be protected by the First Amendment.
It's like the process of censorship itself becomes a tool for silencing people, even if that censorship is ultimately overturned. Now, Tytel wasn't a unanimous decision from the Supreme Court, was it? There were some concurring opinions. Can you tell us what those justices added to the discussion? What other insights did they bring to the table?
Yeah, good point. While the main opinion in Tytel was per curiam, meaning most of the justices agreed on the basics, there were these concurring opinions that provided some really interesting extra layers of analysis.
Okay.
So Justices Black and Douglas, for instance, they really hammered home their view that any long delay in judicial review when it comes to censorship is inherently dangerous.
Mm.
They're worried about the potential for the government to overreach and stifle protected speech during that waiting period.
Yeah, it makes sense.
Justice Harlan had a slightly different angle. He was really focused on how these big delays could actually violate due process rights. That's the 14th Amendment.
Oh, interesting.
He argued that even if a film is ultimately found to be okay, the process itself, the delay, can be inherently unfair. And Justice Stewart, he really zeroed in on the need for a firm deadline for a court review. He said that not having that deadline was a major flaw in Chicago's ordinance.
So even though they all agreed that Chicago's ordinance was unconstitutional, they were highlighting different reasons why this kind of open-ended censorship process just doesn't square with the First Amendment.
Exactly. They all saw problems with the process just from different perspectives.
So let's zoom out a bit. Big picture. Why is Tytel Film Court v. Cusack so important for understanding the First Amendment? Why should we, especially those of you out there who are future lawyers, still be paying attention to this case today?
Well, I think Tytel really solidified those procedural safeguards that were first outlined in Freedman. It made them a non-negotiable constitutional standard for any kind of system that involves prior restraint.
Uh-huh.
It was a clear message from the Supreme Court. They were saying, look, administrative bodies, they can't have unlimited power to censor stuff without some quick judicial oversight.
Right.
And Tytel is a powerful example of how those procedural due process rights, they're intertwined with our First Amendment freedoms. It really underscores that it's not enough for the government to just say they have the right to censor. Yeah. They have to have fair, transparent, and timely procedures to make sure that right isn't abused and doesn't become a way to unfairly silence people.
So for our listeners who are in law school, what are some of the key takeaways from Tytel? What should they keep in mind as they move forward in their legal careers?
I'd say there are a few crucial points to remember.
Okay.
First, really grasp why these timelines are so important in this area of law. It's not just about efficiency. It's about preventing that chilling effect on free speech. Those long, drawn-out censorship processes, they can discourage people from expressing themselves in the first place.
Right, right.
Second, always remember that Friedman, and then reaffirmed by Tytel, places the burden of proof on the censor. That's the government. Hmm. They're the ones who have to justify restricting speech, not the person speaking.
Okay.
And that's a pretty big deal in terms of power dynamics.
Absolutely.
And third, while Tytel dealt with movies, the principles, the core ideas, they have much wider implications. They apply to any system where the government tries to censor speech before it happens. Mm-hmm. Books, protests, and this is really relevant today, it raises questions about how these principles apply to online content. You know, all the debates we're having about moderation and censorship online.
Yeah, that's a really important point, especially given where we are today with digital media. Now, is there anything about Tytel that people often misunderstand? Any potential pitfalls we should clarify for our listeners?
Definitely. It's super important to remember that Tytel was decided strictly on procedural grounds.
Yep.
It wasn't about the content of those films. The Supreme Court didn't rule on whether the films themselves were obscene or not protected by the First Amendment.
I see.
The whole focus of their decision was on how fair and how fast Chicago's censorship process was or wasn't. That ordinance was struck down because the procedures were unconstitutional. It didn't matter what was actually in the films. That's a really critical distinction to keep in mind.
That is super important to clarify. It wasn't about whether the speech was ultimately okay or not. It was about the fairness of the process the government used to try and restrict that speech.
Right. The process itself was the problem.
So to wrap up our deep dive, what's the lasting message of Tytel Film Corps v. Cusack? What should we all take away from this case?
The big takeaway is this. Those procedural safeguards, they're not just technicalities. They're not just red tape.
Mm-hmm.
They're absolutely fundamental to protecting us from government censorship. They make sure that anytime the government tries to restrict speech, it has to follow clear rules, reasonable timelines, and there has to be a guarantee of a quick judicial review.
Got it.
Without those safeguards, the risk of the government silencing people, even if their speech is protected, becomes way too high.
And on that note, here's something for all of you listening to ponder. As you think about the principles we've talked about today in Tytel, how relevant do you think those safeguards are in today's world, especially with all these new forms of media, the debates about online content moderation, and the potential for digital censorship?
Yeah, how do we strike that balance?
How do we balance protecting free speech with addressing other societal concerns?
The tough question.
It's a tricky balance for sure, but Tytel gives us some really important historical and legal context for navigating these modern day challenges.
Definitely food for thought.
Well, thanks for joining us on this deep dive into a really crucial First Amendment case.
It was a pleasure being here. Thanks for having me.
And thank you all for tuning in to The Deep Dive. We'll see you next time.